It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Live from Everywhere USA, it's Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Yes, it is, and I'm Paul Gleiser sitting in today for Jimmy, who is westbound and down, headed for Seattle, Washington, where he is appearing at the Federal Way Performing Arts Center tonight, 8 o'clock. There are still some tickets available if you're in that part of the world this evening. Meanwhile, on the other side of the country, we have some breaking news. The New York area has experienced an earthquake. Now, you don't normally think earthquake in New York. You think the West Coast. You think California. You think Seattle in earthquake. But there it is. Apparently, the epicenter is about 40 miles from Midtown Manhattan. The Fox News radio team is on the story. We're going to keep you posted. Meanwhile, area airports around New York, JFK, LaGuardia, Newark, they're in ground stop. And guys in New York, what is the over-under on how long it's going to take some Democrat or somebody in the media or the Biden administration or the ladies of The View or somebody of that ilk to blame the earthquake on climate change? Because we know it's coming. Meanwhile, while we're processing that, there are some real things we need to talk about. Real being the operative word. Sometime, sooner or later, we have to get real. Right now, about half of us are living in a parallel universe where down is up, and that cannot continue. You know, years ago, I attended a seminar at which I sat in a session run by an ordained Protestant minister who gave up the pulpit in favor of going into private practice. He became a licensed therapist. He called his practice Reality Acceptance Incorporated. Now, it was his observation, and thus the focus of this seminar session I sat in, that if he could get his patients to accept reality, which is to say, accept the truth, their need for therapy would go away. Or put another way, the inability or the refusal to see and accept reality isn't healthy. He told us that getting patients to accept reality is much easier said than done. Most patients, he said, and thus most people, would rather rationalize their pathological behavior and their unhealthy beliefs rather than face the uncomfortable process of changing them. And he went on to point out that of all animal species on the planet, the human species is the only one that's even capable of rationalization. And there you have it, right there, plain and simple, a near-perfect explanation of our politics today. You know, a very large proportion of the voting public in the United States would rather indulge their preconceptions and their lofty intentions and their attempts to feel better about themselves by rationalizing policies and positions that are clearly bad for society and bad for the very people who can least afford to take a hit. And let me jump in here right now with this disclaimer. I fully and willingly disclaim, I'm going to say it up front, I am a conservative, been all my life, and I see the world through a conservative lens. I completely understand that those on the other side, when they listen to me, are going to say that I'm doing exactly what I say they are doing. Fine. But I'm going to say up front that with respect to what I believe today, not much has changed since I first started voting. Politically speaking, I'm pretty much the same guy I've always been. That cannot be said for the Democratic Party. Here's Exhibit A, immigration. You know, unfettered, unvetted, mass illegal immigration to the tune of millions of people a year is unsustainable and dangerous. It hurts everyone involved, including the people who are encouraged by administration policy to put themselves in the hands of cartels that are making billions of dollars exploiting immigrants. Mass illegal immigration very clearly poses a threat to national security. It's only a matter of time before we're going to see some sort of a terrorist act because there's no other way in the world we haven't imported a bunch of terrorists. They have to have come in among the millions who have come in. It's a threat to public safety. It's a threat to public health. We're seeing increases in measles and tuberculosis. It's a threat to public education. Already crowded classrooms are more crowded. They're being crowded with kids who don't speak English, who are slowing down the education process for the kids who have the right to be in those classrooms. Illegal migrants crowd out American citizens for base labor and entry-level jobs, and that disproportionately hurts minorities and poor people. Now, this is all true whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. Your party affiliation and your personal beliefs don't change these facts. These are just simple truths. And it used to be generally, pardon me, equally recognized by Republicans and Democrats. And if you don't believe me on that, listen to this clip from President Bill Clinton's State of the Union address in 1995.
Our administration has moved aggressively to secure our borders more by hiring a record number of new border guards, by deporting twice as many criminal aliens as ever before, by cracking down on illegal hiring, by barring welfare benefits to illegal aliens. In the budget I will present to you, we will try to do more to speed the deportation of illegal aliens who are arrested for crimes, to better identify illegal aliens in the workplace, as recommended by the commission headed by former Congresswoman Barbara Jordan. We are a nation of immigrants, but we are also a nation of laws. It is wrong and ultimately self-defeating for a nation of immigrants to permit the kind of abuse of our immigration laws we have seen in recent years, and we must do more to stop it.
And he got a round of applause. That was reality then. It's still reality. It's reality today. But most of the Democratic Party today is choosing to rationalize that reality away by claiming to help the downtrodden, when in fact what they're really doing is trying to create a massive cohort of people who, being dependent upon the kinds of liberal social welfare benefit the Democrats support, will one day vote accordingly. That is toweringly cynical, but that is what's going on. They choose not to acknowledge that what they're really doing is making life harder for the poor people who supported them, who live here. They're making life harder for people who are living here legally and trying to get ahead. And speaking of getting ahead, if you can't get ahead if you can't get around. And the reality is Biden administration climate policy is going to make getting around way more expensive and way more difficult. I don't believe, personally, this is my personal belief, I don't believe that switching the automobile fleet in America from internal combustion engine vehicles to electric vehicles, even if you could do it, I don't believe it would have any measurable impact on the climate or on global temperatures or on sea levels or on the Arctic ice cap or on the ice cap in Greenland or on the polar bear population. I don't believe that. But let's go ahead and say, for the sake of discussion, that you do. Fine. You and I can disagree. But we're still bound by the same laws of physics and the same laws of economics. Those are realities. And those laws dictate that there is absolutely zero chance, none, zilch, zero, that the U.S. will possibly be in a position such that 50% of new car sales in 2030 can be comprised of electric vehicles, which is the stated goal of an EPA policy that was released just last week. This is a reality. It cannot happen. You don't believe me? Fine. Don't take my word for it. Listen to Republican Congressman Thomas Massey of Kentucky. He, unlike me, unlike Joe Biden, unlike a whole lot of people who are all into electric vehicles, holds a Bachelor of Science degree in Electrical Engineering and a Master of Science degree in Mechanical Engineering from MIT. Remember them? MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. And he earned those degrees before MIT went woke and was still regarded at the time as one of the finest engineering schools in the world. Here is Congressman Massey last year, during a House hearing at which Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg was called to testify in favor of EVs.
The average household uses 17% of their electricity for air conditioning. And that would mean the average household uses 1,870 kilowatt hours per year for air conditioning. If that average household plugged in electric cars, do you know how much more electricity they would use in comparison to the air conditioning that air conditions their whole house?
No, but again, I would emphasize it will
be less energy overall. Let me help you with that first before we go on, because the numbers are important. It would take four times as much electricity to charge the average household's cars as the average household uses on air conditioning.
Now, look, I'll bet you two tickets to see Jimmy Failla in Dallas at the Majestic Theater on June 7th that Congressman Massey knows more about electrical generation and electrical consumption than Mayor Pete. And you will note that no one ever came forward to rebut what Congressman Massey said to Mayor Pete. If Massey had been wrong in his assertion, you can bet the media would have been all over it. The reality is we are nowhere close to being capable of shifting to EVs to the tune of half the fleet or more. Nowhere close. The electric grid in places like California chokes every summer on the air conditioners that already exist. Imagine if you quadrupled the number of air conditioners. Add the equivalent of millions more air conditioners in the form of EV charging stations, and we'll all be sitting in the dark sweating while eating spoiled food. It cannot happen. This is a reality, and it's going to remain a reality. Even if you fervently believe with all your heart that driving your gasoline-powered car is destroying the planet, and even if you're the president and you're trying to make China happy by making the country dependent on them for EV batteries that come from that communist nation. If we could simply, as a nation, Democrats and Republicans, liberals and conservatives, independents, everybody else, libertarians, all of us, if we could simply to agree as to what is real and what isn't, which is for the most part an objective observation rather than an opinion, we could actually start working out what to do about 20 million more illegal immigrants in the country and how best to either assimilate them or return them to their countries of origin. We could figure out how best to get around while respecting the health of the planet. We could figure out together, if we could accept the objective realities, how best to address poverty and failing schools and crumbling roads and crumbling bridges and a shrinking middle class and rising prices for food and shelter and all the rest. But we have to start from a place of reality, and we're not there. We're living, at least half of us are living in a fantasy land, and I'm going to go out and say it. It's not the Republicans, it's not the right that has shifted to the side of crazy, it's the left. I say again, as I said at the start of the segment here, I'm still pretty much the same guy I was 20, 30, 40 years ago. I still believe what I believed then. And Bill Clinton, you heard what he said about immigration. That's where we kind of all were not that long ago. But look where we are now. Until we get back to the place where we have a certain set of actual realities, I'll give you one. Boys are boys and girls are girls. How could we possibly debate whether boys and girls are boys and girls? We've known that since, I don't know, when humans walked upright. I mean, how can we possibly think that there's a debate about whether you're a boy or whether you're a girl? We can just drop trow and check. It's not that hard. And yet we can't even agree on that. And until we get to the place where we can accept certain realities, we're going to be in this dystopian mess. We could actually take a set of facts, and even if we see how to deal with them differently, at least be coming from the same set of facts. And right now, we're not even to that point. We've got to start from reality. So what do you think? You get to help do the show today, because when I'm here, you have to help. 888-788-9910. It's Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla today. Got a big show coming up. We got Joe Concha coming up later in the hour. Next hour, Congressman Pat Fallon from the 4th Congressional District of my great state of Texas. And then Tim Murtaugh, he was the communications director for former President Trump's 2020 reelection campaign. We'll have him on the air later in the show today. And all that time, we'll be listening to you. 888-788-9910. It's Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla here on Fox Across America. There's more coming up.
Don't go anywhere. Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla. We'll be right back.
Guys, are you the same guy that you were 10 years ago? Everybody's been there. You wake up one morning, you feel like you're getting old, man. Stuff hurts. What do I do? One idea is to use the powerful testosterone booster in Nugenix Total T, because it will revive your energy. It'll power up the workouts. Might even put the old fire back in the bedroom. Hey, girl, your old self is back. You'll feel amazing on this stuff. So tap the brakes on the aging process, because every day that passes is a day you lose testosterone. That means less muscle, means less energy, and it does mean less get up and go in the bedroom. And are you really ready to lose all of it, the shape, the muscle, the energy. Are you ready to get old? Okay, you don't have to. You can slow it down with Nugenix Total T. It boosts free and total testosterone. It helps you get the old fire back at work, in the gym, and in the bedroom. Nugenix Total T Testosterone Booster with Tesner. It'll help you turn back the clock and re-energize your life and prove it to yourself. Try Nugenix Total T before you buy. There is nothing to lose. Get a complimentary bottle of Nugenix Total Tea when you text 231-231 and enter the keyword Jimmy. Text now and get a bottle of Nugenix Thermo X, the newest and most powerful fat incinerator ever, with key ingredients to help you lose fat and get lean fast. It is absolutely free. Your complimentary bottle awaits. Text 231-231 and enter keyword Jimmy. Text 231-231 and enter the keyword Jimmy.
Texting enrolls you into recurring automated text messages. Consent not required to purchase. Message and data rates apply. Number one doctor recommended brand by primary care physicians based on an independent survey conducted by IQVIA 2022.
It is Fox Across America. Paul Glaser sitting in for Jimmy Failla. We are monitoring the story of the earthquake that with an epicenter about 40 miles to the west of New York City. It's a 4.8 magnitude, they're saying, the strongest earthquake in 240 years. This is what the report is. I promise you that somebody is going to blame it on climate change. They're going to find a way to blame it on Trump or Republicans. They are going to find a way to politicize this earthquake. It's happening. It happened near the epicenter of media in the United States. It happened near Midtown Manhattan, the epicenter of American media. And they're going to find a way to do it, as Rush used to say, don't doubt me. It's going to happen. Paul Glaser sitting in for Jimmy Failla. Listen, we talked about it in the opening segment about reality, about we have to agree on certain things that are just true because they are. We don't have that on a lot of issues. Here's an example. Here's a perfect example. Vice President Kamala Harris talking about the women's basketball Final Four and commenting on how badly women have been treated. Here she is, cut 20.
Do you know, okay, a bit of a history lesson, do you know that women were not, the women's teams were not allowed to have brackets until 2022? Think about that and what, that talk about progress, you know, better late than never, but progress.
Okay, she is, as Jimmy frequently says, and I underscore every time he says it, a weapons-grade idiot. That is just simply not true. And she's talking about women being mistreated in collegiate sports. Where is her conversation about letting biological males compete against women? Where is her outrage over that? What happened to Title IX? What happened to all of the hard work that women in America did in order to get a level playing field in the world of collegiate sports? Where is she on that? Here is the reality about biological males and women competing in sport. It is.
Only girls can be the mommies. Only boys can be the daddies. Yes, sir.
Well, there it is. You know, boys are boys and girls are girls, and we used to didn't agree on it. We didn't give it any thought. But now you can now we actually spend time debating whether or not somebody is whatever gender they are. That never happened. And we have so many problems, and we have so many things that we need to deal with. The fact that we're wasting any of our precious bandwidth on that is absolutely insane. We need to get real, and it's past time. And yet we spend all of our time debating things that, in my opinion, are absolutely not debatable. 888-788-9910. What do you think about all of that? Joe Concha joins us in the next half hour. We're going to talk about reality with him. We are also going to, as we say, stay on top of the earthquake story, the fact that they're the Northeast, not far from New York City, about 40 miles to the west in New Jersey, experienced a 4.8 magnitude earthquake. We're following that story. So far, no reports of any damage. Haven't heard any report of any damage at all, insignificant or significant. I've heard no reports so far of damage. The airports are in ground stop around New York. I don't know how much longer that will last. Apparently, MTA trains and Amtrak and the trains are running on time. Thank goodness for the trains running on time. The tunnels are around New York are closed, and traffic is backed up. In other words, it's Friday here on the right before the weekend in New York City. Fox Across America, Paul Gleiser sending in for Jimmy Fella. There's more of the show coming up. Hope you'll stick around.
Reality with a bit of insanity. It's Fox Across America with Jimmy Fallon.
Reality is on the docket today. Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Fallon and talking about the fact that we've got to get on some sheet of music that we can share and sing from if we're going to move forward as a nation. The inability to accept objective reality is really getting in our way. Hey, Joe Koch is on the line with us. Joe, welcome to the show.
Hey, you're in the guest spot. This is good. I did it last Friday. It's a great producing
team. Yeah, so we're wrapping up the week. Jimmy's on his way to Seattle, speaking of a place where there's no reality. he's doing a gig tonight. Listen, a couple of things. First of all, leading off, did you feel the earthquake? Because you're there. Did you feel the earthquake earlier?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting because if you live in New Jersey, you know, when this quake first began, since they're so rare here, you don't know what's going on. So my windows shook, and I'm in a place called Wyckoff, New Jersey. So the epicenter of the earthquake is Lebanon, New Jersey. So I'm about an hour drive north and east of where this occurred. And my first assumption was that a very, very large truck had driven by my house. But I'm not on a major road. We usually don't have trucks on them. So I'm like, well, that's not it. And then I thought it was a really strong gust of wind that was hitting the house, because we've had bad winds here in New Jersey all week. We've had trees go down in the area. But when it continued, when it's going on now for 20 seconds, I'm like, well, that can't be the wind. And then you just quickly realize that it's an earthquake. Now, here's the interesting nugget. My wife was walking the dog with a friend of hers, and she came in about 15 minutes later, and she said, what's all these texts I'm getting about an earthquake? In other words, she didn't feel a thing. So Unless you were in a structure that had the ability to shake, if you were walking on the ground, apparently she didn't feel it. So a friend of mine in Boston even texted me and said, hey, I felt that earthquake. Did you guys feel that down there? I'm like, are you kidding me? Boston? I mean, this thing, it's just unreal. The good news is that there are no injuries, it appears. There are no structural damage as far as anything's concerned. When you see videos online, you see things shaking like plants or bottles, but nothing actually falling. So, you know, my friend in California also texted me and said, yeah, if it's not above a 7, we don't even count it. So it's a big story, but it's not a big story.
If it's a 7 or below, it's like it's Tuesday, you know.
Yeah, exactly. But since this happened near the media epicenter of the world, right, as far as New York City, that's why I think it's getting so much attention. Plus, I'm sure that it's rating quite well on all the cable news channels, even though there's really not much to report outside of the fact that this is the biggest earthquake to hit New Jersey in something like 173 years.
Well, it said 200. The channel says 240. So,
240, is that
right? That's what I just saw on the graphic on the channel. So a long time ago, and you're right, it's right in the epicenter of the media in America, so they're going to breathlessly report on it. I said before the bottom of the hour break, it's only a matter of time before somebody on the left blames it on Trump or blames it on climate change.
Trump will be blamed here, right? Somehow, some way, I remember, I'm old enough to remember this, when Trump was president, the Washington Post actually blamed him for a hurricane that was headed towards North Carolina. And the reason why was because he pulled out of the Paris Climate Accords.
Yeah, and minutes later, a hurricane spawned.
Yeah, exactly. In other words, if we stayed in, the hurricanes go away. It's just like this stupid border bill that you got to hear about. Well, if Donald Trump's blocking the border bill, if he would just sign it, we wouldn't have any of the problems that we're having. It's like, A, no, because you controlled the House, the Senate, and the White House for 2 years and didn't do a damn thing while this problem was exploding. And B, if you don't have Remain in Mexico in a bill, and you don't have wall construction in a bill, and you don't eviscerate catch and release, then the bill really isn't a bill that's going to do anything. So, yeah, that's the thing. Blame Trump for everything and anything. And I'm just waiting. Somebody, I got my money on Joy Reid. Somebody is going to bring Trump into this somehow. Like, we cut funds.
It's unavoidable.
You know, and that's that. Go ahead.
Yeah, and it will be tied to climate change. That's unavoidable, too. They will find a way. Meanwhile, Nick Adams at OutKick said, we didn't have earthquakes in New York City when President Trump was in office.
Oh, I've met Nick. He's a jolly old – I think he's an Aussie, right? Definitely an accent there. Oh, that's too funny. I'm actually Googling right – not Googling. I'm putting it to X, Twitter, whatever they're calling it these days, about here we go. Beautiful. Who is this? Boy, you're going to love this. Linda Godano from NBC News, okay? She says, my last report on climate change and potential quake impacts in New York City can be seen here. So, yeah, the tie is already being made. Then she also tweets, can climate change play a role in the frequency of earthquakes?
There it is. There
yes!
it is. No more calls. We have a winner. There it is.
They've They've
already done it. Hey, let me shift gears because I did the first segment. You weren't here. I did the first segment. We as a country have basically lost our tether to reality. At least half of us are. We used to agree on a whole lot more things that were completely objectively true that we now for some reason can't agree on. One of which is boys are boys and girls are girls. I'm going to play a clip for you that I played right before the bottom of the hour from Vice President Kamala Harris.
All right.
And here's what she had to say about the state of athletics, the state of women in college athletics. Cut 20, go.
Do you know, okay, a bit of a history lesson. Do you know that women were not, the women's teams were not allowed to have brackets until 2022? Think about that and what that talk about progress, you know, better late than never, but progress.
Did I hear that correctly?
I would love to know who that reporter was because I saw the clip and his back is turned. And I want to know how he possibly let her get away with saying that when, you know, I don't follow women's basketball. I mean, I am this year, obviously, with Caitlin Clark and then my daughter is 10 and I, you know, had her watch the game on Monday and that had the highest ever audience, the biggest audience ever, I should say, for college basketball on ESPN. So it's a big deal now. But I've never really followed all that much. But even I know that Barack Obama would fill out both men's and women's brackets going all the way back to 2009. And the media would make a big deal of it, how cool he is that he does this sort of thing. So how she doesn't know that, actually, I'm not surprised. It's Kamala Harris. And if I'm the Trump campaign, every day I am hammering home the point that we are now one heartbeat away of an 81-year-old president, mind you, who likes to fall a lot, from this woman being the leader of the free world. And can you sit with that? And that's why I think Trump's VP pick is so important. It's got to be somebody who doesn't carry a state for you. And, he picked Pence because Pence, he was winning Indiana anyway, so I don't think Trump thinks along those lines. But in this case, give me someone who you say, that person could be president in 4 years. And I think that's why you're hearing so much about Ron DeSantis. And, you know, even though the loyalty – he doesn't pass the loyalty test, which also is a big, very big deal to Trump. But I think, you know, Nikki Haley still is probably under consideration to a certain extent because she brings in certain voters and you could see her as president. But like a Ben Carson or who else have I seen on the list? I just shake my head and I go, no, that's just not going to work. Like Tulsi Gabbard, like he's going to bring a Democrat onto there, even though she left the party.
No, I don't know.
I don't see it either. Who do you got if you were to bet right now?
And I don't got. And that's my guy would be Ron DeSantis.
Yeah.
In a perfect world, my guy would be Ron DeSantis. Clearly, he's an effective executive. Clearly, he can take and give back to the media in a very effective way. His oversight of the whole COVID crisis in his own state was they'll be writing textbooks about that. And he's a tough guy, and he's competent. And I know there's some bad blood between him and Trump. I wish they would get over it.
Yeah, Trump took some shots at him, and I criticized Trump for this, and then my social media feed was just a joy to read. But like when he said that Florida was a shutdown state, you know, and criticized DeSantis for the way he handled COVID, as you said, it was textbook. Georgia, Texas, and Florida, they handled it exactly the way it should have been handled. So I don't – that's where I pause, though, because I can see the media just playing those clips over and over again of Trump hitting DeSantis for being like a groomer, you know, because he had a beer with like some teenage girls when he was a – teacher, like all this stuff, like it was so ugly. And you could say, well, it was ugly between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama too. Yeah, but not like this. So, and same with Haley, right? Good calling her, I forget what her nickname was, but it wasn't anything very complimentary. It's just, I guess with Trump, you could do that with anybody though, right? Byron Donalds is interesting. You think he's got a shot or?
I don't know, but you know, going back to Trump, you know, listen, my wife is, she's a recovered liberal. Hmm. You know, she moved to Texas and she, you know, it rubbed off on her. And so she supported Trump through the 2016 election, the 2020 election. She's a Trump supporter, but when Trump said something nasty about Nikki Haley's dress, it made her mad. And I wish Trump wouldn't do things like that.
No, I agree with you completely, because he's right on the issues, right? So,
right as rain.
Oh, completely. Right. Who do you think could handle the economy better? Yeah, Trump, right, over Biden. That's pretty obvious. Who's going to handle crime better? Trump. Who's going to handle the border better? Trump, right? Foreign policy. We didn't have any wars, and nobody was invading anybody when Trump was president, and ISIS was decimated. So that goes to Trump. So I go issue by issue. If he just sticks with that, stays away from this other stuff if he can, just show some discipline and be a positive guy. Like, happy Trump is actually quite charming. When he gets angry and starts spouting off this other stuff, I think it does turn off the wrong people. In other words, the people that he needs to win in those key states like Georgia, Arizona,
those people there on the margin without whom nobody can win. You have to win those people there on the margin that can go either way. Yeah. And I've been saying that every time I've been on the air for this show and every time I fill in for a local show in Dallas-Fort Worth, and you should see what the incoming fire I took. But I think it's legitimate criticism, and I wish it would be taken to heart. Because, you know, if you go all the way back to, you know, when in 2017, was that when the Obamacare repeal vote happened, to 2018? Yeah. And all the nasty things that he said to John McCain cost us the repeal of Obamacare. That vote that he needed, that he didn't get a huge victory that Trump would have had if John McCain hadn't been petulant and voted against him. You know, that sort of thing. It can come back to bite you.
It completely can. And I still think Biden is seen. It's going to be close, you know,
I don't think it should be close at this point. I think it should be. Trump should be up by 10 or 15 points.
Yeah. If I could pencil in a candidate, I would put Glenn Youngkin as my nominee.
Okay.
Youngkin would be up 17, 18 points, because what are you going to hit him with? Then it becomes completely about policy and performance. And at last check, Glenn Youngkin is running Virginia as well as DeSantis is running Florida. And there's a likability and optimism about him. And maybe Trump will select him because he's term limited anyway, right?
Because of the law in Virginia, he is term limited, and that'd be a great pick. You know, and good for you for thinking of that, because I didn't. That's a great pick.
Wow. I'm going to write about this. And I just had an epiphany, live on the air.
You heard it here, folks. Joe Koch is in the house here on Fox Across America. So we've got Glenn Youngkin. He's now our VP nominee. How do you see the Democratic convention playing out? Remember the last time it was in Chicago?
I wasn't alive for that, but I've read a lot about it.
I was alive for that, and it was something to see.
1968, right?
And yeah.
If this war is still going on, and there's no reason whatsoever to believe that it won't be, and we're talking about Israel and Hamas, of course, the president can throw Netanyahu under the bus and completely do a 180 as far as, those American hostages, I don't really care. I just want a ceasefire so I can win Dearborn, Michigan. If the war is still going on, we saw it in New York City earlier this week, where outside of Radio City Music Hall, when Biden did that fundraiser with the insufferable Stephen Colbert, that was massive. That was like thousands of people. So Chicago could be infinitely worse, and it's already a violent city. And it's my favorite city. I'm literally wearing a Cubs sweater right now, but it's changed certainly. So yeah, it's going to be ugly, and it's going to completely take over the news cycle as far as any message that Biden or Harris want to get out during that time. It's going to be squashed by. Unfortunately, it's going to get violent. There, I don't see the same thing happening at the Republican convention, which is in Milwaukee, where they filmed Happy Days. So, something could happen, I suppose. The protests are happening with Biden right now, and not Trump, and that's not something I would have predicted on my bingo card like a year ago.
No, you wouldn't have. And tell you what, if there is a repeat, if we do have a repeat of the Democratic National Convention of 68 in 2024, it was the 68 convention that cost Hubert Humphrey. That's what really got Richard Nixon elected that year.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah,
I thought Nixon won pretty comfortably.
But it was the people were so appalled by what happened in Chicago that it clearly looked like we needed to change parties, and that's what happened
in
1968. So I mean, listen, I don't want to hope for chaos at the Democratic National Convention, and I sure don't want to hope for violence. But that could be something that has an impact here on the 2024 election. Last thing before I let you go, in your perfect world, Do you see a debate happening between Trump and Biden?
I don't. And I don't. It's, look, Trump wants to have the debate. And I hear about the RNC, and they don't like the presidential commission in terms of the choices they've made in recent years. And who can blame them, right? Remember, we had that guy from C-SPAN who's literally sending messages to Anthony Scaramucci, who became a big anti-Trump guy. Like, what do you think I should ask Trump? Uh-huh. And then, like, claim like he didn't write the tweet or something like that. It just, that was ugly. And then, obviously, Kristen Welker, I think, has proven to be utterly partisan. I keep hearing how objective and what she's a real journalist. No, she's not. And when she did that 2020 debate, she chose every type of topic like climate change and race relations that would benefit Biden. So I could see why the RNC has a problem, but I don't think Trump quite cares too much about what the RNC has to think, even though Laura Trump is now co-chair. So he's going to want to debate. He wants to debate Biden right now. But Biden's going to find a way to get out of it, and the media will cheer it on. And Biden's excuse will be the morally superior one, which is, I will not share a debate stage with a man who incited an insurrection at our Capitol. I'm not normalizing him. He's not worth the time. He's a brute, and whatever they're going to say. And then the media will be like, that's great. Because we see with MSNBC and CNN already, they won't even show Trump when he speaks live, right? So I'd love to see debates, because I'd love to see how CNN and MSNBC handle it, because they can't preempt him there, I guess, right? But right. In the end, the only way I could see Biden debating is if he's trailing at that point, and he probably will be, at least in the key swing states anyway. Then he's going to have to. But then there's no upside to that, because if he does poorly, then that's a problem. If I'm Trump during those debates, I would give a 30-second answer on what I would do with the border, just list it bullet point 1, 2, 3, or yep. What I would do with the economy 1, 2, 3. And then I would say, and I'm deferring the rest of my time to Mr. Biden, and he can explain why he objects to the remaining Mexico
and
policy.
Just let him talk and get out of the way. Don't do what he did at the debate in 2020. Hey, Joe, it's fun. I've got him up against a break. Good for you to be on the show, and hope the earth moves for you in a better way later. You know?
It really was nothing. I find the coverage funny, but what are you going to do? It was great talking to you. Have a good weekend.
You too. There he goes, Joe Concha. Here we go. More of the show coming up here on Fox Across America.
You're listening to Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
You know, Joe Concha and I were talking here on Fox Across America with Paul Reiser filling in. We were talking about the vice presidential nominee for Donald Trump. Who will he pick? You know, it was John Adams was the first vice president of the United States, and he did not much care for the job. He is famously quoted as having said that he held, as vice president, he was holding, quote, the most insignificant office ever devised. But in a less famous quote, he also said, I am vice president. In this, I am nothing, but I may be everything. And for the first time in my voting life, I'm actually giving some thought to and caring about who's going to be the VP pick, because we have an 81-year-old who's the incumbent who, you know, could win the election. We hope he doesn't, but he could. We have a 77-year-old who is seeking to the office for a second time. Neither one is spring chicken. And if the 77-year-old wins, then we're going to be looking at only 4 years, because he'll be term limited out, and the VP pick will become the heir apparent. We want somebody who can actually win so that we can get 12 years of a Republican administration instead of whipsawing back and forth. So I care a lot about who the VP is, and we'll talk about that at some length later in the show. It's Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla. You can follow me every week at my weekly blog, youtellmetexas.com. We have our up with Congressman Pat Fallon here on Fox Across America.
Live from everywhere USA, it's Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
It is hour two of Fox Across America. Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla, coming to you from the great state of Texas, where our summers are hot, our beer is cold, and our razor wire is sharp. We have on the line with us, we have none other than from the state of Texas, Congressman Pat Fallon from the 4th District of Texas. And if you're not familiar with congressional districts in Texas, the 4th District sits along the border with Oklahoma. It is the seat once held by none other than the famous Speaker of the House, Sam Rayburn, of the Democratic Party way back when. Congressman, welcome to the show.
Paul Gleiser, how are you, sir? You're a great American.
Well, and back at you, sir. So listen, I want to play you a piece of audio I played in the first hour. We're talking about, we're here in Texas, And the number one issue, it's kind of eclipsing the economy, is immigration. I want to play you a clip from Bill Clinton's State of the Union address in 1995. And then let's talk about it. Here it is.
Our administration has moved aggressively to secure our borders more by hiring a record number of new border guards, by deporting twice as many criminal aliens as ever before, by cracking down on illegal hiring, by barring welfare benefits to illegal aliens. In the budget I will present to you, we will try to do more to speed the deportation of illegal aliens who are arrested for crimes, to better identify illegal aliens in the workplace, as recommended by the commission headed by former Congresswoman Barbara Jordan. We are a nation of immigrants, but we are also a nation of laws. It is wrong and ultimately self-defeating for a nation of immigrants to permit the kind of abuse of our immigration laws we have seen in recent years, and we must do more to stop it.
And there, members of his own party applauding him. How did Democrats go from that to where we are now?
Wow. Oh, they became not liberal, but they became woke. They devolved. And how the mighty have fallen, Paul. Can you? I mean, that's unreal. If a Republican gave that speech today, the left would call it racist. They would say it was xenophobic. They would say it was impractical and it wasn't compassionate. What it is absolutely rational, because you should, as a nation state, know who's entering your country, particularly because, you know, one thing, Paul, that nobody ever talks about is that 3.8 million people that are trying to get to this country the right way, legally, waiting in their home countries, 95% of which are people of color. And those are the kinds of people that we are rooting for. So when the left tries to inject race, it even is more of an absolute, really ludicrous. It's ridiculous and it's ludicrous.
So then how did we get here? How did they go, and what propelled the Democratic Party to the point of a president who is so off the rails on this topic?
It's left of left of left, and for Biden specifically, because it's a very good question that you ask. It's because he's not running the country; his staff is. He's not the guy that he once was. Any rational, objective person can see that with their own eyes. They can hear it with their own ears. And so the staff is further left than he is. I mean, look at his policies. It makes absolute – not only it's a great policy to secure your border and reinstitute wait in Mexico, where your asylum case will be adjudicated while you wait in Mexico, because then that not only stems the current tide, but it also reduces the flood to a trickle when they call back home and say, I've come all this way, it cost me this much money, I went through the dangerous country of Mexico, and I'm still stuck here. You don't get that follow-on migration. That would help. It's a great policy for the United States. It would help him get reelected in November, and yet still he won't do it. I don't know, man. My head is smoking. But he's going to lose the election, I believe, in the fall because of this one particular issue.
Well, I think you're probably right, but the question, given I asked Joe Concha this in the previous half hour, given the fact that clearly most people in the United States today are looking at the immigration problem and seeing it for what it is, they're seeing the reality of it, and even Democrats, you know, just rank and file people you just talked to, your Democrat friends, they recognize we can't keep doing this. Most people recognize that the economy is not in great shape, you can talk about low unemployment, low and comparatively low inflation all you want. The fact is a huge percentage of the population is having trouble paying for groceries and paying for gasoline and just keeping the lights on and the roof over their head. People are struggling to pay their bills. They're paying for essentials on credit cards. There's a whole lot going wrong. Why isn't Donald Trump up by double digits?
Well, because the media is in the tank for the Democrats. I mean, let's look at the facts. Inflation, things cost 19% more now than they did when Biden took office. So we're all essentially one-fifth poorer than we were when he became president. Unemployment, they claim, is at 3.8%. It's low. If you inject the folks that are not even looking for work, it's closer to almost 8%. And groceries, that a grocery bill that would have cost you, Paul, $100 in 2019 would cost you $136 today. That's 36% more. Gasoline was $2.39 when he took office. It's $3.55 today. That's 48% more. And real wages are down 4%. So people are not doing – that's a real easy question that – President Reagan asked then candidate in 1980, looked at the camera and he said, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? And 55% of Americans, I think, said, no, we're not. And that's the percentage he got. Ultimately, when people go into the voting booth come November, they're going to ask themselves that question. And I think Donald Trump, whatever he's polling, he'll probably do a couple points better, because in the sanctity of that voting booth, people are going to say, no, I don't want this anymore.
Congressman Pat Fallon's with us. Let me shift gears with you here, because we talk about the reality of immigration and versus what they're doing. The reality is this cannot continue. One way or another, this cannot continue. Here's another reality. The Biden administration is pushing electric vehicles as hard as they can. EPA just came out with tailpipe rules last week that make it effectively impossible for car manufacturers to sell anything, to push anything other than electric vehicles. They're pushing us into electric vehicles. Here's something you don't know. I just looked it up. Here we are, you and I, both in the great state of Texas. Right now, this moment, according to the dashboard at ERCOT, the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, the organization that manages the Texas grid, 25.9% of the power at this moment, right now, this second, is coming from solar. 47% is coming from wind. So here we are in the great state of Texas. We're the biggest solar producers. We're the biggest wind producers of electricity. We lead the nation. Nonetheless, there is no way that we could possibly withstand changing our automobile fleet to electric and have the grid withstand.
No, there's no doubt that, in fact, it's not just Texans, across the country. The grid was never intended to supply power for tens of millions of vehicles.
Oh, but they say solar and wind. They say solar and wind is the answer. Solar and wind. Right now, 72% of the power that's being consumed in the state of Texas, as you and I are talking, is coming from solar and wind.
Mm-hmm. Well, they can say that, but what the again, if you want to live within the bounds of reality and not ride your unicorn to go see your mermaid friends, which is going to be paid for by leprechauns, we want to live within the bounds of reality, we have to have an all-of-the-above approach.
Of course.
We have a lot of natural gas in this country, and that's a clean burning, and it's a lot better than oil and gasoline. And we also have hydro, and we have solar, and we have wind. How about nuclear? If you really want to talk about reducing your carbon footprint, you have to talk about expanding your nuclear capacity. The left simply doesn't want to talk about it. So you wonder, is it just something that they seem to derive their power, Paul, from the problem and not the solution? They want a constant problem. They constantly harp on certain things, global warming, racism. And they never want to talk about, you want to combat global warming, plant billions of trees. That's one thing that I'll filter out. They don't talk about solutions. They just talk about problems. And it always is all roads lead back to redistribution of wealth.
Well, yeah, there you go. But see, the thing is, we're not going to have half of the fleet being electric vehicles by 2030. That is simply not going to happen.
No.
But the problem is any attempt to make it happen is going to hurt people, and the people it's going to hurt the most are the people who can afford it the least.
Yes, on the back of the poor. And the way it works, if you notice, with these administrations, these Democratic administrations, they'll put out these rules, they'll celebrate how virtuous they are at cocktail parties, and then when the rule comes, you know, and the deadline comes where you have to start this rule that's impractical, then they delay it. That's happened at the state levels, that happens at the federal level. And when the President of the United States said in his State of the Union address last year that we may need fossil fuels in 10 years, is he insane? Of course we're going to have fossil fuels.
He
said may. He said may. Made my jaw drop, may. So, again, is it going to be unicorns and mermaids and leprechauns and rainbows, or are we going to talk about real solutions?
Well, and real solution to what? I mean, the headlong push into electric vehicles in order to save the planet. I don't know where you stand on this. I personally don't buy the premise that if you somehow magically converted the entire vehicle fleet in the United States to electric vehicles and magically took every internal combustion and diesel engine off the road, I don't think the United States converting to electric vehicles would have any significant impact upon the climate. Maybe somebody disagrees with me. The fact is, that can never happen, so it's an academic debate.
No, I fully agree. In fact, when I talk about solutions, I'm talking about American energy independence. We have the capacity for it. We need a president that has the will to implement it. We had one. His name was Donald J. Trump, and hopefully he'll be the 47th president of the United States. When you're talking about global carbon footprints and things like that, the United States has reduced our carbon footprint by almost a 25% in the last 25 years. China has tripled theirs. We live on a planet. The United States is not a planet. We are a nation state on a planet. And so when you have China and India and other developing countries increasing their carbon footprint, if you even believe that carbon is the issue and the problem, then even if we didn't output any carbon, it's not going to do much, as you said, ultimately, because China and India and so many others aren't playing ball. So my solution when we're talking energy is I want affordable energy, I want reliable energy, and I want it made in the United States of America so we don't have to rely on Putin and many Putins like Venezuela and Iran and, quite frankly, even Saudi Arabia.
Congressman Pat Fallon of Texas is with us. I'm going to shift gears on you here. Here's my nightmare scenario, and I want you to make me feel better. The nightmare scenario is as follows. Donald Trump wins the Electoral College, but the Democrats take the House. And then they do exactly what they accuse the Republicans of doing and try to deny the election. So make me feel better about the Republicans holding on to the House, starting from this incredibly narrow majority they have now.
I do think – let's play both scenarios out. Let's say the Democrats control the House, which would be an absolute nightmare. Dark clouds, very gloomy. As far as Donald Trump being sworn in as president, they would need that not only the House but the Senate to deny it, and I don't think that would happen. Certainly there's going to be elements that will try that. I do think we'll hold the House, and this is why. We're going to probably lose a couple seats in New York, but it wasn't as bad they're redistricting because they double redistrict. It wasn't as bad as it could have been, and we're going to pick up some seats because of some redistricting in North Carolina. We also lost some seats because we nominated the wrong people and very winnable seats. In one of come to mind in Michigan, one in Washington State, and we've got some good candidates. Well, so I think on balance, quite frankly, Paul, I think we'll end up pretty much right where we started, about 222, if not maybe 220. It's going to be narrow. I don't see any real scenario unless there's, God forbid, some kind of awful terrorist attack from folks that come through the border that is going to be blamed at Biden, which it should be, because he's endangered Americans for 3.5 years.
Yeah, but we don't want that to happen.
We don't want that to happen. Absolutely. That's the worst case. That's like a double nightmare. I don't want one person to be harmed by these evil SOBs. Barring something dramatic and traumatic, I think we're going to land at about 220. It's going to be real tight, and I do think we'll have the Senate, but again, it's going to be by one or two seats.
Can we please quit fighting over who the speaker's going to be?
We damn well better. I mean, Mike Johnson's the most conservative speaker we have ever had. He's excellent. He was dealt a very difficult hand, considering what had been negotiated sometimes behind closed doors that we didn't even know about by his predecessor. And so he's doing a very good job in a very difficult fashion. I don't always vote the same way as Mike, but most of the time I do. And I am one of his loyal, one of the loyal members. We need to put that to bed. Mike Johnson is the Speaker of the House, and he's going to be for the rest of the year and hopefully for many years to come. And now that he has the appropriations process under his belt, if this is the one that he's going to own, we're going to do what we can, because it's divided government. So conservatives aren't going to get everything we want in a budget or out of appropriations. But we're going to get wins, and we need wins. And, for instance, I really think that we need Wait in Mexico to be reinstituted. President can do it on his own, refuses to, so we should use this year's appropriations process to compel him to do so.
Congressman Pat Fallon from, Texas's 4th District. Congressman, appreciate it. You hope you have a great weekend, and I hope everything you just said comes true. Thanks for being a part of the program.
Paul, God bless you. Take care and have a wonderful weekend.
You too. There he goes, Congressman Pat Fallon of Texas. Here we go. More of the show coming up after the break. Stay with us.
You're hanging out with Jimmy Failla on Fox Across America.
Here we go. Fox Across America. Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla. I led off the show at the top of the first hour by saying that if we can't agree on what is real and what isn't, we're going to have a hard time in our politics. not every Democrat is guilty of being unable to see the world as it truly is. Here's one that's you've been able to call it pretty well. He's the guy who famously said back when Clinton was running, it's the economy, stupid. It's James Carville on where the Democratic Party is as of today, right now. Cut 18.
It's horrifying. Our numbers among younger voters, particularly younger blacks, younger Latinos or whatever, younger people of color, particularly males, we're not shedding them. They're leaving in the droves. They'll take time to understand their lives. They think that all politics is just a bunch of bull, people arguing back and forth. Here I am, I'm 26 years old, there's given interest rates, insurance costs, everything that's going on in my life. I don't think I'll ever own a house. I'm living with my parents, I just think the whole thing is just bull.
There he is, the famous James Carville, calling it straight. The fact is, the Democratic Party is shedding younger voters, it's shedding black voters, it's shedding Latino voters, because they do see reality. They see the fact that they're not getting ahead. They see the fact that their prospects have dimmed. Young voters that at the stage in life where most people start to buy houses aren't able to afford to buy a house because of how much money costs and how much houses cost and how their wages are not keeping up with the rising cost of everything and how much food costs and gasoline and everything else you need in order to get through life. James Carville sees it clearly, but most of the Democratic Party does not. And they continue to push an agenda that is hurting people, and the people that are getting hurt are starting to notice. If James Carville is right, then the polls are wrong. They're just not reflecting the reality of what people that traditionally vote for Democrats are actually experiencing. It could be a much bigger margin in 2024. We'll talk about that as the show goes along here on Fox Across America. Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla here. And your calls will come up in the pretty soon, 888-788-9910. Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla here on Fox Across America. Don't go away. Here we go, Fox Across America. Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla, 888-788-9910. On the line with me right now, Tim Murtaugh, communications director for former President Trump during the 2020 re-election bid. He's author of the book, Swing Hard in Case You Hit It. Hey, Tim, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Paul. I appreciate the opportunity. Good to be with you.
Really good to have you. Let's talk about 2024 in the context of 2020. This will be Trump's third run for the presidency. What will be different in 2024 on this run compared to 2020?
Well, I think the obvious difference is that America has had a chance to see a President Joe Biden in action, and that's not a benefit that we had in 2020. We of course warned everyone that this is exactly how Joe Biden is going to be. But I think COVID was the big complicating factor in the 2020 election. In 2024, this race, and I'm not working on the campaign, and I don't presume to offer them advice. I know all those guys, and they're all professionals, and they could run their own campaign. But to me, it sets up as a perfect side-by-side. You compare the Trump presidency with the Biden presidency, and to me, it's no contest. Trump wins that comparison running away. It's not even close.
Yeah, but the polls are close.
Yeah, and they will stay close. And I don't think anyone should have any illusion that this is not going to be a razor-thin election. Think about it. In 2016, there were three states separated by, I forget the exact number, but three states combined separated by approximately 80,000 votes, out of tens of millions cast. And then in 2020, it was three different states separated by about 45,000 votes. So even though the media doesn't portray it this way, the 2020 race was about twice as close as the 2016 race. It was much closer in 2020 than it was in 2016. I don't see any reason why 2024 will not be exactly the same. It's going to be a handful of states. going to be a margin of, you know, 10, 20,000 votes in each of say, three states. And it's going to be a grand total of 60 or 65,000 votes that separate the two among across three states. And that is going to decide who the next president's going to be. And I think that the way with the way the country is, the way that people's attitudes are, the way they think about the country, the way that America is positioned on the world stage, the way our border is in chaos, the way the economy is, everything. The world is in chaos. Everything tilts towards Donald Trump's favor.
Well, let me ask you this, because I have said this on this show several times when I've been filling in for Jimmy Fallon, and I've said it in other venues, and I've taken an incredible amount of criticism for it, but I stand by it. In light of that kind of a razor-thin difference, the thing that Donald Trump cannot afford to do is offend and run off a voter that otherwise might have broken his way, and to do that by verbal excesses, by gratuitous name-calling, by doing things that suburban women think are mean and ungentlemanly and untoward. He needs to be careful that he doesn't offend voters that he's going to need. What say you?
Well, I think I hear a lot of people say stuff like that, and I really find it hard to believe that there are that many people across this country who don't already have a pretty firm opinion about Donald Trump. And
I'll buy that. I agree.
And I think people talk about suburban women all the time, and certainly that's what the media talks about when they mention a gender gap. But there are two gender gaps. You know, Donald Trump has a gigantic advantage with men voters. And the gap that Biden had enjoyed his advantage among women voters is smaller than it used to be. Donald Trump, in many polls that I've seen, is actually winning Latino voters, which is basically unprecedented for a Republican presidential candidate in recent times. And he's also really putting up very un-Republican-like numbers among black voters. And so I get it. Some people might be bothered by the way he talks, but I'm not certain those people, if it bothers you, are you ever going to be a Donald Trump voter in the first place? I think it's more instructive to look at the losses that Joe Biden has encountered in certain segments of the voting population. And again, I think it all works out to people vote for what is in their own personal best interests and in the interests of their families. And I can't see there. How many people could there be who look at Joe Biden's record and go, yeah, I want more of that?
Well, believe it or not, there are people out there apparently that do, because he's running closer in the polls than I think he should. I don't know to what degree Donald Trump is under polling. I don't know to what degree Joe Biden is over polling. I just would like for it to be not as close as it appears to be. You know, you can look at the swing states. According to the Wall Street Journal poll that dropped this week, fairly seismic. He's winning by greater than the margin of error in four of them. He's winning in five of them, one of them within the margin of error. He's only down in one of the swing states. That's all good news if it holds and if it turns out that way. But let me shift gears here. You're talking to Tim Murtaugh. He was the communications director for Donald Trump in the 2020 campaign. I have never really cared as a voter. I've never really gotten too excited about who the VP pick was. I mean, there's always, you know, the strategy. Well, which state does the VP pick bring, or which group of voters does he shore up, and all those kinds of things. I think the vice presidential pick this time is incredibly important, and I'm going to play you a piece of audio that explains why.
So I think it's very important, as you have heard from so many incredible leaders, for us at every moment in time, and certainly this one, to see the moment in time in which we exist and are present, and to be able to contextualize it, to understand where we exist in the history and in the moment as it relates not only to the past but the future.
Okay, if Joe Biden wins, it is likely that she would finish his term, and that's the level of intellect we'd have as the President of the United States.
Yeah, and that's pretty frightening. And I think it's fair to remind people that Kamala Harris, during a debate last cycle in the 2020 Democrat primaries, she straight up called Joe Biden a racist.
And she did.
Yeah, she really did. So, yeah, you're right. And the VP pick is going to be pretty important, and it usually is. And this is the third go-round for Donald Trump, and he'll have a different VP running mate this time. And I don't presume to say or suggest in public who I think he should pick. I think there's a laundry list of them, and some of the names are probably coming and going on that list. But he'll make a good choice. He knows what he's looking for, and I think he bounces stuff off of people. But ultimately, this is a decision that he's going to make all by himself.
Tim Murtaugh, communications director for former President Trump 2020 election bid. Let's play this out a little bit. Let's war game this a little bit. You know, the objection that Donald Trump had to the 2020 election was really encapsulated in election night vote counting. When a whole lot of things went on, we said, how can that be right? And we watched, you know, Georgia stopped counting votes because of a water main break, turned out to be an overflowing toilet, and things like that. And it, what, 40% of the people in the United States, 40% of the electorate, is not comfortable that the 2020 election is on the up and up. And there is still a high level of refusal to accept by a lot of people the results of the election. The fact is, Joe Biden was sworn in as president. But the things that led to that concern, has the Republican Party done a good job of making sure we don't have a repeat?
Well, I'm not inside the RNC, and I don't know the extent to which they are running a big legal program. I know they're working on it a lot. I think that the most important thing for Republican voters to think about is that in certain states, there are laws that allow people to do things like ballot harvesting legally. There are laws like in, for example, the state of Pennsylvania, which has no excuse, universal mail-in voting. A lot of our voters don't trust those things, and with good reason. They are ripe for fraud. You can cheat through vote by mail. You can cheat through ballot harvesting, which is just one person going and gathering up armloads of ballots and turning them in on behalf of other people. However, the Democrats are going to be doing that. And where it is permissible by law, you've got to be able to vote and use the manners to vote, which are permissible by law. I know a lot of our folks object to them on principle, and that's great. I understand why they do. However, you're conceding a large part of the playing field if you're saying, we're just not going to vote by mail because we don't trust it. We think the other side will cheat. Therefore, we're not going to use it at all. I mean, I hate to use this cliche, but it's cutting off your nose to spite your face. I want everyone to follow the law, and I hope that our Republican lawyers are in court making sure people are following the law. But we have to take advantage of things that are permitted legally in states where they are permitted.
You referred to Trump's growing support among Hispanics and among black voters. I'm going to play you one of my favorite pieces of Trump audio from the 2016 campaign. He was in Michigan, and he was talking straight to black voters, and he said this.
Look how much African-American communities have suffered under Democratic control. To those I say the following. What do you have to lose by trying something new like Trump? What do you have to lose?
I think the Republican Party has been guilty of writing off black voters and not even going and making the pitch. Now, I have had salespeople that refuse to go make the pitch, and they quit being salespeople for me. So if you're not willing to go ask for the sale, how do you expect to ever get it? I think that was a brilliant moment for Donald Trump. I hope he does a lot more of it.
Oh, I agree. I agree totally. And I think he's exactly right. And the message that he's trying to portray there is to tell black voters or other groups of voters who the Democrats have come to take for granted, you know, you've been giving your support pretty much in a block voting fashion to one particular party. And honestly, what do you have to show for it? Have they actually helped improve your life? And if the answer to that is no, not really, then honestly, he's right. What do you have to lose? Give the other guy a chance. And when Donald Trump, again, as I said, the side-by-side comparison of the two presidencies, when Donald Trump was president, the unemployment rate and the economic situation for black Americans, for Latino Americans, for women, for Asian Americans, for white Americans, for men, everyone, it was better for everyone all across the board. And I think those are the things that the Trump campaign is going to be pointing to.
I think and of course the media is not going to report this, and this is one of the big problems we have in terms of picking who's going to be our leader, who's going to run our government. We don't have honest reporting from the media, because if the media were honest, they would have to say that every single demographic cohort did better in the 3 years prior to COVID during Donald Trump's presidency. Every single one. The wealthy got wealthier, but so did the poor, and the poor got wealthier at a faster rate than the wealthy got wealthier. Black unemployment was at the lowest levels ever recorded. Hispanic unemployment, lowest levels ever recorded. Household income, including that great American invention called the middle class got a raise for the first time in decades in terms of real income and inflation-adjusted dollars. First time that had happened in a long, long time. And these are the things that a whole lot of people don't know about the Donald Trump presidency.
Yeah, and that's right, and that's why I say I think it, you know, I don't presume to tell the current campaign team what to do, because they're all professionals. And as a matter of fact, the campaign manager Chris LaCivita hired me for my very first political job in 1999, so 25 years ago. So I know that these people know what they're doing, and I know they're going to set up that side by side comparison. And I go through a lot of this stuff in the book that you mentioned at the top. I mentioned that Chris LaCivita is one of the guys that I knew early on in my career. And so the book that I'm pushing here, that right now that's just came out this week on Tuesday, it's called Swing Hard in Case You Hit It, and it's about my life in politics. But the subtitle of the book gives you an idea that it's not all about politics, because the subtitle is My Escape from Addiction and Shot at Redemption on the Trump Campaign. And it's half about politics, but the other half is my decades-long battle against alcohol and the way that I made it through it. And working on the Trump campaign was sort of the culmination of the my own big comeback story and my redemption story. And that's why I'm proud. I'm happy to be on the show to be able to talk about it. So thank you, Paul.
Well, okay, let's wrap up the segment with that. Swing hard in case you hit it. What led you to write it?
Well, as I just said, I had a decades-long problem with alcohol, and I, during the course of it, I quit drinking finally on May 16th, 2015. But before that point, I went to rehab, alcohol rehab, 5 times. And every time I was in rehab, I spent a lot of time in the bookstore, and I always gravitated towards the titles that were written by people who were telling their own stories about how they struggled, what problems they faced, the terrible problems they got themselves in, and how they got out of it. And I got a lot out of those books, but I found out, like, I read them all, and I ran out. You know, 28 days is a long time to be in rehab, and I ran out of those books. And I thought to myself, you know, if I ever get the chance, I would like to write a book like that myself. And that's what I've done, because those kinds of books, people telling their own personal stories, they helped me when I was in rehab. And if a person picks up this book, and while they're flipping through it for 10 minutes, during that period of time, they don't take a drink and don't pick up a bottle, then it was worth writing. And, I thank President Trump for giving me the chance to serve on his campaign. I went from waking up in jail one day in 2015 to flying on Air Force One less than 4 years later. And, it's a good story. I feel like it's a good redemption story. And I owe Donald Trump a lot. I really have a lot of gratitude for his influence and the way my life has turned out to this point.
The full title of the book again is
Swing Hard in Case You Hit It, My Escape from Addiction and Shot at Redemption on the Trump Campaign. It went on sale on Tuesday, and it's available on Amazon, Target, BarnesandNoble.com, all the places you would normally find books. I encourage people to go out and check it out.
And Tim Murtaugh, how do we follow you?
You can follow me on X, formerly known as Twitter. My handle is @TimMurtaugh, and I would appreciate that very much. I also co-host the Line Drive podcast, which is a political podcast. We have a pretty good fun talk about current events and pop culture and stuff. Comes out weekly, and I would appreciate it if people tuned into that as well.
Tim Murtaugh, Murtaugh. Tim, appreciate you being part of the program. Congratulations on the book, and have a great weekend.
Paul, thank you so much.
There he goes, Tim Murtaugh. We have more of the show coming up. Hope you'll stay with us.
A show that's taking orders from the big man upstairs.
We're on a mission from God.
This is Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
It's Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla here on Fox Across America. We led off the show by me putting out the posit that the Democrats have gone so far to the left and have gone so far crazy, we can't even agree on things that are objectively true. And that being the case, we have little hope of solving our problems. The next hour, the next half hour for sure, I want to hear from you. What do you think? 888-788-9910. Phone lines are open. I want to hear from you. Have the Democrats gone so crazy that you can't even have a conversation anymore? Boys used to be boys. Girls used to be girls. Nobody used to argue about it. Now look at us. We at one time, President Bill Clinton said we can't have completely wide open borders. We have to observe the law and obey the law with respect to immigration. Now look where we are. We are being told that that in order to save the planet, we're going to convert the entire vehicle fleet to electric vehicles. Anybody with a brain knows that's not going to happen, but it's being pushed on us. This is where we are. We're not really solving problems. We're not playing even on the same team. We are all Americans. We all, as a team, ought to solve the problems that we face. But if we can't agree on completely basic things, how do we have any hope of the country getting better? 888-788-9910. I want to hear from you in the next half hour. I want to talk about that. What do you think? 888-788-9910. It's Paul Gleiser sending in for Jimmy Failla here on Fox Across America. The third hour is coming up. Hope you'll stick around. Don't go away.
Live from everywhere USA, it's Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Hour three of a big Fox Across America. Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla. And on the line with us again, actually in studio with us again, Taylor Riggs, the Fox Business Network. Hello, Taylor.
Thanks for having me back.
Oh, listen, you're a lot of fun. You can come back anytime. You're a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Listen, you are a business reporter. Let's talk a little car business. What is the impact? What are the auto manufacturers saying today in the meetings that they're having about the tailpipe regs that came out from the EPA last week?
Okay, so really interesting. We've had a lot of conversations on our show this week about electric vehicles and the emissions trying, or, oh, cool, we just got a good interruption on this program, but I'm going to keep going. Someone just opened the door, Paul. Sorry about that. About sort of, you have an EPA and a government trying to lead the way into being cleaner, right? Which we all understand. No one wants to breathe in smog. I've said that on this program before. I think what we have on our program, though, the conversations, is you have an EPA coming out and doing all the work and making laws and making policy decisions, when in reality, that's why we vote for Congress. So you are seeing them sort of take responsibility away. I don't know what they're saying about an individual tailpipe regulation here or there, but I think bigger picture from a policy perspective, you have an EPA coming out with a lot of guidelines and a lot of rules. They are not a lawmaker. Congress is the lawmaker. Congress needs to take back control and be regulating and doing all of that things and not having and sort of diverting it to the EPA. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. But the reason I ask you is because a listener sent me a photograph of an assembly plant, a Ford assembly plant, the lot filled from fence to fence with unsold electric Ford F-150s.
Yes. This is very interesting. Hybrids might be the future. So I understand what you're saying. We just actually had a big report on our show, and I came running here right after, where cars on the lot for a full EV is something like 70 days or so. You're looking at a couple and a half months for an EV to sell off the lot. Gas is down a little bit, somewhere I think in the 50s. But if you have a hybrid, it's only taking about 25 days to sell. So that shows you right there that people are looking at maybe hybrids as the future. But I think to your point, you're right. A full EV certainly is not it, because dealers on the lot can't get rid of those cars. And then, of course, gas-powered cars are something that people all love. They know. They trust. Some of the conversations we're having on our program is the depreciation value. When you drive a gas car off the lot we kind of know how much it depreciates and what the resale value for that car would be, right? When you drive an EV off the lot, what is it worth? Is the battery worth anything? If the battery dies, are you replacing the battery like you replace an engine, or are you replacing the full car? What do you do with that battery when it dies? Is that battery recycled? So people don't really understand maybe the depreciation value or the resale value of that EV. And I think that's what you're hearing from a lot of people on the lot who are holding these cars. Those are the questions that they're being asked, and we don't have answers to those.
Taylor Riggs, Fox Business Network, is with us. Here's the thing I don't hear a lot of people talking about, but I just look at the real world. I try to see the world real. And I look at somebody who doesn't make a lot of money, mm-hmm. who's just getting started in life, or for whatever reason doesn't have a lot of money. That person could count on, for decades, that person could count on a reliable stock of used mm-hmm. cars that were still serviceable. They may not look as good as they did when they came off the showroom floor. They may know the body may be banged up, but they will still get you from point A to point B, and they will do so at a price that people of lower economic means can afford. What happens to those people when electric vehicles, which everything I read, become essentially useless when the battery dies?
Exactly.
And to your point of what's it going to cost, what happens to those people? Because that looks like it hurts poor people to me.
Yes, and I hope that those aren't the people who are left behind from these policies, who if you take away a lot of the subsidies that the EV makers are getting to make these cars, to make them cheaper, because remember, that F-150 Ford EV truck that you just mentioned, Ford needs a lot of subsidies from the government in order to make that vehicle, because they're still losing a lot of money on those, right? Ford isn't profitable. So once you lose those and you start raising prices on consumers, you're right. It is that low income consumer who feels probably like they are going to be left behind. Now, I don't know, and I'm just speaking out loud here, does that change if EVs or hybrids? And I think, again, a lot of people have spoken and said hybrids are a great sort of intermediate point for where we are at in this moment, because you get the gas powered and you get a little EV all in one. But once those start circulating into the system and then you start to see a resale value, will the market sort of dictate what that's worth, similar to the way we were able to dictate what a resale value on a normal combustion engine was? I don't know. We're not there yet, because we're not in that phase where we've been able to see what a resale value is for those. So I think you're bringing up a lot of good points. I think when I'm talking to policymakers about how they are creating policies for constituents, for low, middle, high-end consumers, are we thinking about everyone? Are we especially thinking about that low-income consumer? And I think a lot of people feel like this is an administration that is hell-bent on creating a climate change policy, and they want EVs no matter what, but no one is thinking through those secondary and third effects about what is this person going to do if the battery dies.
The climate change agenda, if that's what you want, it's going to fall disproportionately on the backs of the people who can least afford it.
We talk about that all the time, because it's like an inflation. It's like a tax, right? And you pull those subsidies out from under people, and they can't afford these things. And this also speaks to the bigger conversation that I know that you and I have had a lot on this program, is, are EVs really good for the climate? I am pro-environment. We all are, right? We all want fresh air to breathe. We all care about this one planet that we live on.
I want to breathe dirty air and drink foul water like everybody else, Taylor. And don't infringe upon my right to pollute and poison my body. Of course I want clean air and clean water.
But are EVs the way to do it? Because all the mining of that material, the lithium, the nickel that's coming from China has not reduced their emissions. India has not reduced their emissions. No matter how much we in the U.S. reduce our emissions, this air is circular across the globe. We have to get China and India on board, or there's nothing that we can do in the U.S. that will save us, right? So when we talk about EVs, if we're not holding those two big countries accountable for their emissions, that's a whole separate story. Nothing we do is going to work. But if we're mining all of these minerals to make the batteries in China, those are dirty. you know? And how are we powering the EVs? Are we powering these on electric grids? Are we powering these from coal, from nuclear energy? We need to be, how are we recycling the batteries? Are we throwing them into a dump? So again, the EV push to change climate change, I'm not sure if people are really thinking through the narrative on EVs sound good because it sounds like we're going green, but is it really green? Let's talk about the whole supply chain of that battery and of that car and how you dispose of that. And again, what's the resale value so that we don't hurt the lowest income consumer?
Was Congressman Pat Fallon said of Texas said in the previous hour, the United States is not a planet. It's a country. Correct. On a planet that it shares with China and India. Mm-hmm. So the United States could go 100% EV. I don't think it would have any measurable impact on what happens with the rest of the world's climate. So that topic covered. Let's shift gears, if you don't mind.
Let's do it.
Okay, here's the shift. I have been concerned for all of my years of doing this that there's going to come the day the United States is going to spend itself to the point of no return.
Don't even get me started on this.
Well, I'm getting you started right now on this, okay? Because, you know, I used to, when we were running deficits in the billions, I said this is unsustainable. Now we never say the word billion. Billions like pocket change. Now we're running deficits in the trillions. We have $34.5 trillion in debt. Where is the tipping point and how do we stop?
I'm going to give you both sides of this debate. Because okay. I am like you. I hear $34 trillion and I think unsustainable, no way. The interest that we are paying to service that debt is going to be higher than the interest of our entire defense budget. It's what, $1 trillion that we're spending just on interest? And guess what? Rates are what, 4.5%? It was all fun and games when rates were zero and we could finance our debt at 0% interest. But now that interest is 5%, it's actually really costing us money to be running these debt and deficits. So I am alarmed. I am worried about, I just had a daughter. She's going to be on the hook for all of this. Her kids are going to be on the hook for all of this. I probably will too, a little bit in my generation. The other side of that is people I hear who come out and they say, you've been ragging on the debt and the deficit for ages.
And nothing bad's ever happened.
Yeah. Exactly.
Nothing bad's ever happened.
We're closer to the cliff than we were 10 years ago, but are we at the edge of the cliff? I agree with you. I take the side of this is unsustainable. We're running wartime era deficits and we're not in war.
And so what happens when we are, if we, God forbid, if we find ourselves in a war, you know, then what?
Right.
You know?
I agree. This is totally unsustainable. It's fiscally irresponsible. Remember, it was just 20 years ago that we were talking about paying off our debt and being sort of neutral, right? Being able to pull in our revenue as much as we were paying out our expenses and having sort of a balanced budget. You know, I hate to say this, but I think it's both a Republican and a Democratic issue.
No, 100% it is.
You know, 100%. Presidents on both sides and Congress on both sides that have really, I think, financed all of this spending without thinking about the problem on future generations. But what really gets me is I, as the fiscally responsible member of my family, balance my budget every month or every paycheck. Why am I being asked to do that when the country that I love can't get its act together and have a responsible, balanced budget, or my city or my state? That's what I think a lot of people are angry about. We all have to balance our budgets. I can't run up my credit card debt, or guess what? I pay for it. But we have a country that does it, and seemingly there are no consequences. My worry is when we start to feel those consequences.
And the thing is, I've been blowing this horn now for all this time, and really nothing discernibly bad has happened yet. But I tell you what, Taylor, I have seen what happens in households. I have seen families, friends, that have gotten themselves in too much credit card debt.
Yes.
To the point that the just making the minimum payments is consuming money that they need to pay for groceries.
Doesn't that feel like where we are in this country?
That way, I've seen people that have overpaid for houses and turned their houses into prisons.
Yep.
And I have seen people literally wall off their personal freedom by going into too much debt, and I fear that for us. And I think that's a real issue, but I'm sure you sure don't hear Democrats talking about it, but I really don't hear Donald Trump talking much about it.
I agree, and, you know, unfortunately, because we have, well, I guess it's good and bad. I guess you could say the good thing about China or Russia is they have their elected, I'm saying that in quotes, leader who can do whatever they want. In America, the good news is we have a democracy. The bad news is it means we think about election cycles. So every 4 years, we have our little talking points. And to your point, we're in an election year, so we can't talk about cutting spending. We can't talk about cutting Social Security or Medicare. Those are hot button topics, and we can't do it. Neither side wants to touch it. But I'm ready to have that conversation. I mean, I was just talking to my husband the other day. Do we invest in our 401k, or if my 401k gets too big, are they going to then take away my Social Security? Because Social Security is not going to be around for me 10 years from now.
Well, that's a fair question. But here's the thing, I kind of reject the premise a little bit. I think if somebody comes out and honestly says what's going on with, say, Social Security.
Yes.
I think if you just come out and tell the truth, I still have enough faith in the American people that they can handle it.
I would hope so. And I hope that we all can start to have an honest conversation about entitlement programs. And frankly, spending problem. This isn't just Social Security. We have a spending problem in this country. Revenue from taxes has never been higher. We are all taxed to the max.
Yep.
There is no more amount of revenue that you can raise to fund reckless
spending. Oh, no, there's all the rich not paying their fair share, Taylor. Haven't you heard?
If you tax the rich 100%, it still wouldn't cover.
Wouldn't make a dent.
The spending that we have. So I am ready to have a conversation about spending. I hope that, you know, fiscally responsible people in this country are all ready to have that conversation too. The sooner we have it, I hope the fewer the cuts that we get in terms of our entitlement programs, but we have to get it in order. I hate to be doom and gloom on this Friday. It's like a nice day, I'm sure, where
it's
you are.
It's a beautiful day. It's a gorgeous day in Texas where I'm sitting. Absolutely gorgeous.
It's frustrating,
day.
I think, overall, because we are all trying to manage our budgets at home, but we live in a country that wants to spend recklessly.
Yeah, and that's too bad. Taylor Riggs, Fox Business Network. It's always a great hang with you, Taylor.
Thank you for having me. This was a good chat today.
It's always fun. You have a great weekend. You won't get to see the eclipse. Looks like we're not going to get to either.
Cloud cover on Monday.
It's going to be cloudy, you know.
Okay, well, I'm bringing my glasses anyways.
I own a $400 photographic filter that's good for exactly nothing else.
Beautiful.
In order to photograph the eclipse that I'm not going to get to use. But listen, if we get a miracle, I'll get to see it. Taylor, you have a great weekend.
And
did the earth move for you earlier today?
I didn't feel it.
Okay.
And my baby slept through it.
Well, there it is.
So I'm winning.
All right, Taylor, you have a great day. Have a great weekend.
You
there
too.
She goes. Taylor Riggs, Fox Business Network. Here we go. More of the show coming up.
The show that's crashing the establishment party.
I don't recall seeing your name on the guest list.
Nothing to be embarrassed about. I sometimes go by my maiden name.
You're listening to Fox Across America with Jimmy Fallon.
All right. This is the last half hour of the show's coming up. I want you to be a part of it at 888-788-9910. Whatever we've talked about so far on the show today, whatever Jimmy's talked about this past week, whatever is on your mind, I'm throwing it wide open to you. Paul Glaser sitting in for Jimmy Fallon, Fox Across America, 888-788-9910. I have this question for you. You can answer this. Do you have liberal friends, Democrat friends, who just can't see things that are objectively true, that cling to things that can't possibly be right? I don't really have any people in my personal circle who really believe that men can be women or that women can be men. I don't have anybody. I'm talking about my liberal friends. I don't have anybody that's that far gone. What about you? 888-788-9910. I don't have anybody in my circle who really, truly in their heart believes that we can really sustain millions and millions of people pouring across the border indefinitely, coming into the country, consuming social services. What about you? 888-788-9910. It's Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Fallon here on Fox Across America. Fox Across America poll. Glad you're sitting in for Jimmy Failla. Jimmy will be back on Monday. He's in Seattle tonight, appearing at 8 o'clock in Seattle. There's still tickets available. You can look it up, FoxAcrossAmerica.com, JimmyFailla.com, I think. You can Google it. You'll find tickets if you're in Seattle and want to see Jimmy. But meanwhile, it's you and me and the phones at 888-788-9910. Taking your calls, Gary in Lake Stryker, Texas. You are up. What's on your mind?
How are you today, Paul?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for calling.
I'm the damned Yankee from East Texas. my main concern, and I talked to you before about this, is I have not heard what Donald Trump's plan is to deal with ballot harvesting and mail-in balloting.
You got to ask the Republican National Committee about that. That's really their brief.
That.
You know
that, and if that's not handled, I don't think there's a win in sight, because the Democrats have got that such locked down to such a perfection that I don't know. I would ask your opinion. What are they going to do with this?
Well, I am told, and I've had conversations, I'm told that they're on the case. And I am told that, you know, you got to remember that both Pennsylvania and Georgia, in the wake of 2020, based on their experiences, they passed laws that tightened up some of what went on in those states. I mean, there has been some legislative relief. There have been some attempts to fix the problem. The real way for the problem to go away is to win by a cheat-proof majority. That's the real way to make sure that you don't lose by cheating.
I agree with that. However, I had the pleasure of listening to Alan West down here in East Texas once, and he explained how the Democrats had infiltrated basically the school boards and the counties of the largest counties across the country. They didn't even focus on states. They focused on counties. And if they're going to take that particular matrix to the elections, they're going to start winning these elections on the local level, as well as winning the congressional elections, and it's going to make it almost impossible for a Republican win if we don't start participating in this.
I agree, and the Republicans have been a little naive, and they've, you know, Republicans have, you know, tried to take the high road. Republicans, as I believe that Election Day ought to be Election Day, with some exceptions. You know, you can used to get what was called an absentee ballot. If you would certify under oath that you were going to be absent on Election Day, you could vote with an absentee ballot. We never envisioned Election Month. We never envisioned ballot harvesting. And we Republicans have tended to be kind of traditional with respect to that. And we have underappreciated the fact that if you go in to election night already down by 300,000 or 400,000 votes because of early voting, because of mail-in voting, you're going to lose. And so the fact that you would prefer Election Day to be handled differently than it is doesn't change the fact that the reality, which goes back to what I led the show with, the reality is this is how elections are done. You better adapt to it. So I'm not dismissing your concerns, Gary. I think the Democrats are real good at this, and the Republicans are playing catch up. Let's hope we've played enough catch up, and not the stuff you pour on your hamburger. We've played enough catch up with the way the Democrats do things, so that in 2024 we're not looking at a huge deficit that could be brought about by impropriety or doing things in an underhanded way. Let's hope that we learn something. I'm told that we have. We'll find out. Okay. Gary, appreciate your call, and you have a great weekend. Cornell in South Dallas, another Texan. You're next on Fox Across America. Cornell, what about you?
Yeah, you had asked the questions about the do you have liberal friends, and I have a lot of them, and they be thinking I'm weird because I'm like a Trump supporter and everything, and you know how that is in South Dallas because everybody is a Democrat regardless. Well, and I was wondering why. Oh, you go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You were wondering why what?
Oh, I was wondering why, like, the some of the stuff I'd be telling them what Trump did and some what the Republican Party did for, like, the hood and everything, they'll believe me, but they, like, I don't have, like, no flyers or anything. Like, it's no Republicans coming to the hood trying to say anything good, what they done. It's like they just don't care. So it's like why the hood don't care, really. But they got the same value as us, though.
Well, listen, I think anybody, when you talk about the hood, I think anybody wants to live in as nice a circumstance as they can. They want to live in the nicest house they can afford. They want to drive the nicest car they can afford. They want to drink clean water. They want to breathe clean air. They want to eat good food. They want their kids to go to good schools. And I don't think that matters whether your skin color is black, brown, or white, or if you're from Asia or if you're from Pluto. I think everybody wants those things. And I think the Republican Party has been pretty weak about going out and saying those words in predominantly black neighborhoods to predominantly black audiences. I think the Republican Party, well, I think the Democratic Party has been guilty of taking the black vote for granted, and I think the Republican Party has been guilty of writing the black vote off.
Yeah, because it's a lot of support down here. They just don't come fishing for it, that's all.
Well, let me tell you, I played this earlier in the show. This may be my one of my absolute favorite Donald Trump clips. It's from a campaign rally in Michigan in 2016, and he was talking to a largely black audience, and here's what he said.
Look how much African-American communities have suffered under Democratic control. To those I say the following. What do you have to lose by trying something new like Trump? What do you have to lose?
What do you say to that, Cornell?
Yeah, I'm not a loser, so I vote for Trump. So, you know, we don't have nothing to lose. We got everything to lose. We keep voting the same way. That's how I see it.
When you say this, I'm assuming you're a black man. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. When you're hanging around with people that you know who are black, you go to your church, or you go to wherever it is you hang out, and you say you're voting for Donald Trump, what happens?
How they look at me crazy, talking about how do you vote for that man, and you use a race traitor and all that old crap. But, you know, it ain't nothing. I still don't stand 10 toes down. It ain't nothing.
Well, you're a brave man, Cornell, and appreciate your bravery. And listen, I hope you can convince some of your friends to join you, because I don't think the Democratic Party has done anything actually to help black people in 50 years. I think the Democratic Party has used black people to get elected for 50 years, but I don't think they've actually done anything to actually on an ongoing, sustained basis help black people rise above where they are. I think by this point in American history, Civil Rights Act of 1964, so we have 60 years. I don't see how black people and white people aren't in the middle class at roughly the same proportion.
I don't either.
And I don't think
I
there
don't
should.
See it neither.
I don't see how there should be any difference. Any real difference in educational attainment between black children and white children. I think all of our kids should be well educated and equally educated, irrespective of skin color. You know, for decades, even when I was growing up, I grew up in a time when there was the white schools and the black schools, and the black schools got the short end of the stick, and that was wrong. It never should have happened. It's a shameful fact. It's a shameful part of our history. But that's no longer the case. And so
when do we get over it? When do we get over it? It's like they keep bringing that part up. It happened, but when are we going to get over it? What's the next step? We're going to know the next step, it seems like.
Well, Cornell, listen, I appreciate what you're saying. You're a hell of an American, and you're a good man to call the show, and I hope you have a great weekend. You and I probably in the same boat. We're right here in the middle of Texas. We're hoping to the total eclipse will go right over our head. We hope it won't be clouds, but it's looking like there's going to be.
Yes, indeed. Trump 2024, man.
All right, listen, appreciate your call, Cornell. Greg, Lake of the Ozarks, you're up on Fox Across America. What do you say to Cornell and Gary?
I'm all with Cornell. I mean, this man has some smarts.
He does. He also has some nads, because I can tell you, it's hard for a black person who lives in a black community that votes overwhelmingly Democrat to come out of the closet and say out loud, I'm going to vote for a Republican, because there's just been this belief that Republicans hate black people.
That's not true at all.
Well, of course it's not true.
I don't hate black people. They're intelligent people. I mean, good God. But anyway, I had two things.
What's that?
First thing is I heard on Michael Reagan a long time ago, when you try to argue with a Democrat and you get them cornered, they start getting loud. They're brainwashed. They will not understand common sense that you're trying to speak to them. They start yelling at you. Okay, my second thing is, I heard this on Levin last night, and this is really good. Anthony Blinken's, our Secretary of State, his parents donated millions of dollars to George Soros, the guy that was paying for all these buses for the riots. How do you like that one, Paul?
Well, I don't like it, and I don't like George Soros, and I don't like anything that George Soros stands for.
Anthony Blinken.
I understand that. The Secretary of State is in the pocket of George Soros. If that is true, I'm very independently verified that, but I'll take your word for it. Although things like that, I like to know from a second source. But for the sake of this discussion, Greg, I'm going to go with you. I don't like George Soros. I don't like the fact that George Soros has poured millions upon millions of dollars into the campaigns of district attorneys such as Gascon out there in Los Angeles and Bragg in New York that are turning their cities into hellscapes.
I think he's pushing it.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, Paul. He's a socialist.
He's a socialist, and I think whether he's deliberately and specifically intending to or not, he's tearing America down. Because if you can't count on the law enforcement apparatus where you live to protect you, if you're a law-abiding citizen, if you can't count on the police and the district attorney, the prosecutors, the law enforcement ecosystem to protect you from bad guys, you lose the society. We can't sustain a civil order if we can't count on bad guys being deterred and punished. And that's exactly what's happening. We are reaching the place where we know that if you call the police, all you're going to do is create somebody who, the minute he gets out, is going to come back on you. We don't put criminals in jail. We don't protect the innocent. And then all of a sudden we have this thing going on, Greg, where somebody, if you leave and go on vacation, you could come back, find somebody living in your house, and you can't get them out.
I can get them out.
You understand that, and then you'll go to jail for doing what you did to get them out. That's crazy.
Absolutely. Yep, you're right. Yeah, but Paul, you're doing a great job, buddy. I appreciate it. Oh, by the way, I've had a concealed carry permit all my life. Never did carry until now.
Well, let me ask you something, man. Before you go away, Greg, I'm not a gun guy. I am a pro Second Amendment to the hilt. I believe in your right to bear arms, to own firearms. I believe in your right to carry firearms for self-protection. It's just not a thing that I'm just not a guy that's into guns. I'm into cameras. I'm into airplanes. I'm into a lot of stuff, but I'm not into guns. But
you're on the subway.
Yeah, I understand that. But here's my question. You've been do you routinely carry? Do you walk around with a gun on you when you're out in public?
It's concealed. I didn't used to until a year ago, I'd say. I'm getting a little paranoid on what's going on. Carjackings and this and that, and nobody's going to take my pickup. Nobody.
Yeah, I understand that. The reason I have never gone and gotten a concealed carry permit is because I'm just uncomfortable with having a weapon on me that could hurt me or hurt somebody else, and introducing the possibility of misuse. But I'm kind of like you. I've talked to my wife about it.
I've been through the Vietnam War. I've been all over the world. I'm 75 years old. I've seen it all. I've voted for what I'm supposed to vote for. I'm a hardcore conservative. I hate the waste of government money, spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on tucking underwear for transgender, whatever you call them, people. And I'm I'm burnt out. I can't stand what's going on.
Yeah, I know that. But listen, buddy, we're going to try to end the show on an upbeat. Don't give up, because I look at the electoral map, and I look at the map of the United States, and I look at those rivers of blue on the coast and that ocean of red in the middle, and I continue to draw strength from the fact the big heartland of America where you're living, the heartland of America, is still good and solid and believes in the things that made us strong and made us the greatest nation on the planet. I still believe that. That's Greg. There he goes. I hope Greg believes it too. Hope you believe it. Hope you will stick around. We have a little bit more of the show coming up after the break. Stay with us.
The show that connects you to people in high places.
It's like the most important man in the world standing here, and you got a conversation going with each other.
Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Paul Gleiser for Jimmy Failla, 888-788-9910. Carl in Longview, I deliberately left some time for you. I've got about a minute. What's on your mind?
Yes, Paul, can you hear me fine?
I do hear you just great.
I just wanted to address the issue that you were talking about with the young lady earlier.
Yeah, with Taylor Riggs? Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Go quick, Carl.
The only way to do that is for an Article 5 convention. The government is not going to quit spending money.
Well,
the states are going to have to step in and do it.
Well, that could be true.
To do it.
An Article 5 is a convention of the states, and that'll be hard to bring about. And it's very, very hard to keep the pigs from away from the trough. You send them to Washington, they start spending money. You may be right. I tell you what. More than you want to know, but if we hadn't passed the 17th Amendment, which took Senate elections away from state legislatures and made them popular elections, used to be the senators were elected by the state. So you had the Senate represented the states and the House represented the people. If we still had that, I don't think we'd be $34 trillion in debt. And I don't think we'd be spending money the way we do, because you wouldn't have senators beholden to people wanting them to bring home the bacon the same way House members are. It's too late. The horse has galloped away from the barn, and we're $34 trillion in debt. And you're right, it may take a convention of the states. And if it gets bad enough, we'll have one of those. Hey, listen, Carl, appreciate the call. I'm glad we could work you in. Hey, Jimmy Failla will be back on Monday. Jimmy's in Seattle, probably landing there about right now. He is at the Federal Way Performing Arts and Events Center. He's doing his show tonight in Seattle, 8 o'clock. There are still tickets available. Just Google Federal Way Performing Arts Center. You'll find it. You'll find tickets available. Jimmy will be back on Monday. It's been a lot of fun sitting in. Paul Gleiser sitting here. I do a weekly column at youtellmetexas.com. You can tell me from anywhere. You don't have to be from Texas. I just happen to be from Texas. YouTellMeTexas.com. I say what's on my mind. You say what's on yours. What's on my mind right now is I hope you have a great weekend. I hope you enjoy some time off away from work. I hope you have a great week next week. Thanks for being part of the program. Go make it a great weekend. Thanks.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.